Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast, the Zoom edition. And I've done some trial runs. It seems to work okay. We'll find out, though, in a little bit. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackwitz. I can see Bob. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Matt. Nice to see you, too. I see you're in a ball cap, even though the two of us are just chatting via Zoom, you and your host, me and mine.
Your hair looks
like it always does.
Yeah.
Matt, cap.
Yeah, I just came from like an hour and a half walk, so I just put a hat on. So,
what is the most comfortable thing that you've worn? And let me preface this by saying, if you're new to the pod, you should know Matt does not A, own pajamas, B, on track pants, yep. C, on a bathrobe.
That is true.
What is the most comfortable thing you've worn?
These jeans. Yeah, I'm wearing these really comfortable jeans right now. I'm running in my jeans, walking in my jeans. All my pants are comfortable.
Wait a minute. It's 9:22 in the morning.
Yeah.
I don't have to be anywhere all day.
I know, but
you're
I
already
went
wearing jeans?
Yeah, I went. I literally just came. I was wandered around the city for about an hour and a half.
Well, okay, that's fair. If you went outside, I kind of get it. But
yeah,
you're like one of those rich guys who has like, okay, no, wait. Were you the kind of kid who came home and had like home clothes and had to get out of his outdoor clothes before he could play indoors?
No, I never had any of that. My thing is, though, is like I still get up and the moment I can, pants are going on. I will be wearing a belt sooner in the morning than 95% of Canadians.
But why?
I don't know. It's just habit. You know, it's just there. You know, there's the pants. There's the belt. Let's do this. It's like I need to transition from morning to not morning.
Okay. So you can see me from the waist up, right?
Yeah.
Let's play a game since this is the first video conference we've done.
I don't think I want
to play this game. What is Bob wearing under the shirt, below the shirt?
I'm going to go baggy basketball shorts.
All right. Stand up in the reveal?
Just your pajama pants. Yep. Just your blue patterned whatever pajama pants.
I was walking around in these blue plaid pajamas, an undershirt, and a toque on my head. Mm-hmm. And my wife, Sandra, looked at me and said, this looks like the picture that TMZ puts up after a celebrity has died that says last known picture.
Or you're like Ben Affleck when he's really on a bender, but he has to go to Starbucks.
You know what? Ben Affleck does Puffy so well.
He does. He does. And then he cleans up so well. Guy. Yeah. It's
almost, you know, like what? Honestly, like he must have like a portable sink filled with ice that he can just carry around with him. Because he can go from puffy to basically pretty darn presentable in a hurry.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He's got a little mini unit and probably some HGH as well.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. So this is our first Friday edition of the pod where we finally let our hair down.
Yeah.
We throw off all the rules of the usual pod.
That's right. And we break down the Leafs' third line. Alex Kerfoot. Why'd they make that trade for Kadri?
So there's three things we're going to do today. One, listener questions.
Yep.
Two, I've got a game for us called Elimination. It's kind of morbid in the sense that with COVID, we're kind of looking at different things in culture and figuring what comes back and what doesn't. So in that spirit, at the end of all this, only one of the options I give you gets to come back, has to go, and you pick which one.
Okay.
You have to eliminate one of the things I send you. And then, of course, your AMC questions. Please talk about your AMC radio show questions, which have been so amazingly successful.
Yeah, no, well, you know what? Why don't we just kick off today's, which I haven't even sent you. But on AMC at 2 o'clock, J.J. Abrams' Star Trek is going to be on during game day. And we're doing best movie reboots.
Ooh, that's a really good one. So it's the 2009 first one then?
Yes.
Great. That's actually a really good reboot.
I'm going to be honest. I will cry every time in the first 15 minutes of it. when Hemsworth dies, saving the entire Enterprise. The music, the way it's paced, I'll still get, it's not weeping, but I'll still get choked up. I got choked up a month ago watching it. It's sad, it's pathetic, but it's true.
The first, let's say, 15 minutes of that movie are fantastic.
Oh, you're right.
The opening, where they set the scene, the sort of the primal scene where all the trauma is, and then the cut to the kid. Kirk is a kid driving through the cornfields while sabotaged by the Beasties is blaring. Mm-hmm. What a fantastic couple of sequences.
Yeah.
And even the fight in the bar with Pike, right? Where Pike comes and, you know, he's got the, you know, he gets punched out by the cadets and he's got the Kleenex shoved up his nose afterwards and he's drinking one of those futuristic looking drinks.
That are always blue. It's always blue. Sometimes with a little bit of smoke or fog coming out of the cup.
It's funny you say that. I once wrote an article for iMagazine, once it existed, like the in Toronto, kind of the weekly that was alongside Now Magazine. I wrote an article for them, How You Know a Movie is Set in the Future. Mm-hmm. And one of the things was all the booze is blue.
Yeah. It's a very bright color. Most of the time blue. A lot of robes. No jeans or denim. There's a bunch of different rules that set that up, that set up all those movies.
Well, do you want to sort of brainstorm best reboots?
Well, here, I'll give you, I'm going to give you first my also-rans, the ones that never made the list. Are you ready?
Yep.
Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
Okay.
Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper's A Star is Born.
Good one.
Coen Brothers' version of True Grit.
Mm.
Marty Scorsese's Cape Fear. The 2017 reboot of It, and finally, Steven Soderbergh's Ocean's 11.
Okay, so I've got an objection here to your list.
Sure. Those are the also-rans.
Grounds. No, they're all really good picks, but some of them are reboots and some of them are remakes. Mm-hmm. See, I think to be a reboot, it has to be a franchise.
Well, the Tom Holland one does, the Soderbergh does, and It, there are two parts. Does that count?
No, and I don't think that either one of those are reboots either, like the Soderbergh and It, because there was only one movie that they were remaking. Now, they got a franchise out of it.
Yeah.
But like as opposed to the Spider-Man, where there were multiple movies and there was intellectual property before it. See, I think that, you know, A Star is Born is interesting because there were three versions of it, but I think there were three remakes. Like Star Trek is a reboot because you're taking a franchise and beginning it again with a new cast and a new story trajectory. Like Star Wars, is it a reboot or a continuation?
See, that's why Star Wars isn't on mine. But Bob, I have now solved the problem that you've thrown out there because I am the dictator of all AMC content. Mm-hmm. The new question, which I just wrote, with J.J. Abrams' Star Trek on during game day, give us your best reboots / remakes.
Hmm.
I'm inclusive. It's 2020, Bob.
It's wonderful, Matt. Like Cordell Stewart, you are Slash.
That's right.
Do it all.
God, I love Cordell Stewart.
Wasn't he great? He came on Off the Record and he had a Band-Aid on his nose.
Yeah, that's right. He was like the Star Trek movies. Every other one was good. Like, go back and look at Cordell Stewart. Every other year, like, he'd a run where he had a Pro Bowl year, bad year, Pro Bowl year, bad year.
This is funny. This is so weird how this happens between you and I. For the game elimination, I actually had a comparison between a food and Cordell Stewart.
Really?
I changed it and I modernized it because I thought a lot of our audience might not know who Cordell Stewart is. And I suppose the fact we're talking so much about him now is just bad broadcasting on my part. I haven't explained who he is. Draft pick out of the University of Colorado, went to Pittsburgh, could do everything. He was a quarterback, but also a wide receiver. And he played special teams too, didn't he?
Yeah. He did a bit of everything.
He was a Ron Lancaster type.
That's 100% right. He was a Ron Lancaster in honor of the CFL draft yesterday. Do you want to hear my top five? Well, the number one is the easiest. Christopher Nolan's Batman reboot. I mean, that has to be number one.
Yep. Do you have a 2 through 5?
Number two was J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. Number three, I guess this is a remake, but John Carpenter's The Thing. There's no way that's not making my list. Mad Max Fury Road at 4. And Zack Snyder's 2004 Dawn of the Dead, the reboot of George A. Romero's 1978 classic. His zombies were fast. That was my top five.
That's an interesting one, you know, and I think in some ways I'm too hard. Yeah, it's those are great picks. The zombie one is excellent. That's really, really smart. It's tricky to know the difference between a remake and a reboot because you think of the Watchmen TV series on HBO.
Yeah.
It's a remake, but it actually isn't because they don't duplicate any parts of the story that existed before. They create all new characters. They create a new universe. Is that a reboot? I think so.
Yeah, it is tough. Well, you know, I'm not sure. I just want to talk about The Thing. It's such a good movie.
You know what would be a good topic too, maybe as a sidebar, is franchises you would like to see rebooted. Because talking about John Carpenter movies, I would love to see them reboot the franchise of Snake Plissken and the Escape from movies, New York and L.A.
Who plays Snake in 2020?
Great question. So Kurt Russell, you have to be kind of manly, definitely manly, but also sort of funny and kind
Brolin? Could you do Brolin?
Whew.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah. Deadpool 2. He had some comedic moments as well in that movie.
Yeah, you know what? He's a funny guy. That's actually a really good pick. Josh Brolin would be amazing. Good pick.
Yeah. I was thinking Chris Pratt, but he's a little too pretty. So I went to Brolin.
You know what? Chris Pratt's good too, but it would push it a little bit towards the kitschy. One of the great things about Snake Plissken is he was goofy and tough.
Yeah.
In equal measure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's that balance. That's the AMC today is top five remakes.
Okay. Well, I created lists out of all the ones that you sent me.
Do it. Then we'll do listener questions after that because we got a bunch.
Okay, great. Do you want me to tackle my top five sword fighting movie or my top five action movie villains?
Do sword fighting because action movie villains will be here for 4 hours defining what's an action movie. That's what I spent most of yesterday's show doing.
You know, it's a great point. And I will just simply say that action is a very hard genre to define because a lot of other genres contain action. Be quite action-packed, but like, is Star Wars an action movie or is it a sci-fi fantasy?
So to me, it was sci-fi fantasy.
Me too, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think when you look at action, you got to look at movies like Lethal Weapon and
Mr. Joshua and the General.
Yeah. You know, let's get back to this because we can get sucked down the rabbit hole. You wanted to do sword fighting?
Yeah, do sword fighting.
All right. And this was in honor of what movie? It was Princess Bride was on, right?
That's right.
Right, so here's my top five, and you are going to hate them.
All right.
At number five, 1952, Scaramouche, starring Stuart Granger.
All right, keep going.
Number four, Yojimbo, classic Toshirô Mifune movie, Akira Kurosawa.
I think we need to define classic in a North American xenophobic context. Continue.
Number three, Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Number two, Highlander.
Okay.
And number one, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. The greatest sword fighting movie of all time because, one, it has maybe my favorite single sword fighting sequence atop the bamboo trees in the forest with Chow Yun-fat and the young girl whose name escapes me right now. And it's about a sword. It's about the theft of the Green Destiny. And it's all about trying to reclaim this mystical sword. So it's actually a movie about swords.
I've never actually seen it. It's a blind spot for me. It's one of those movies I should have seen that I haven't seen.
You know, honestly, it's a masterpiece. It's so good. It's so rich. It's like, in a lot of ways, it's better than Star Wars, but it's not as fun as Star Wars. And here's what I mean by that. Star Wars is super rich in a mythological language. You know, when George Lucas created it, he went really hard into sort of like those Joseph Campbell archetypes, you know? And so does Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. But I think Star Wars wanted to make a popcorn movie that had deep mythological roots.
Yeah.
And Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is an art movie that has a hell of a lot of great action sequences.
I'll put it on the list. I have time.
Yeah, fair enough. It's so good. So good.
Yeah.
Highlander, actually, I think is a highly underrated sword fighting movie.
I got to rewatch it. I saw it as a kid And it's one of those movies where I'm thinking it didn't satisfy to what I wanted the same way when I saw Blade Runner as a kid and got taken to the movie theater. I thought I was going to see Star Wars Part Two, and I did not.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. Like, my dad once took my sister, my little sister is probably like 14, to go see The Two Jakes, which was the sequel that they wrote to Chinatown.
Yeah.
And she thought it was a comedy about two guys named Jake that get into the country. She told me afterwards, she goes, I'm sitting there 20 minutes in. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Barton Fink.
Highlander suffers like some 80s movies do from like really syrupy 80s art direction.
Yeah. Cocaine.
It's a little hard to take it seriously now.
Yeah.
You know, even Blade Runner, even though it's a masterpiece, like at times the Tangerine Dream soundtrack, you go, it's a little 80s.
Do we need all the synthesizer? It's like, hey, listen, Ridley Scott, save some synthesizer for the other bands. You don't need all of it right now.
It's like when you watch movies from the late 60s and they always have a scene that happens in like a club where like hippies are dancing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm sure at the time it made total sense, but it's a little cringy now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I highly recommend Akira Kurosawa's Yojimbo.
Is it on Netflix?
It's on Criterion.
What the hell's that? I don't think I get Criterion.
Perfect answer. Leave it there.
Yeah.
I made one observation for you that I thought you would like.
Yeah.
Sword fighting movies are the boxing movies of weapons. Because gunfight movies are different. They usually require volume because, like, if I look at you and you look at me and we both have a gun, the fight's short.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right, but the key to a good sword fight is it has to be impossibly long, mm-hmm. with twists and turns.
You know, that makes the ending of Kill Bill 2 so curious. You're waiting and waiting for this really long fight scene between Bill and Beatrice Kiddo, and she just gives that little cha-cha-cha on the chest and kills him. There was never a sword fight.
Well, and that's why the fight with Lucy Liu from the first installment is so amazing.
Yeah.
Because the movie kind of peaks there, and it builds to that, and it does feel, and was it the 5, 6, 7, 8s? What were the names of all the warriors there?
Yeah, yeah, the 68 Club or something, or...
Was it the
88? It's some number like that. Yeah, the 86s. Now I feel like we're just trying to figure out what year the Giants won the Super Bowl. Was it 88? Was it 86? What year was it? It was 86.
I'm going to trust your take on that. Okay, so we've still got action movie villains to get to.
Yeah.
And threequels as well.
Yeah. Okay. So some listener questions. I'll first do the recent ones on Twitter, and actually the ones from today and then yesterday. Darren Dreger writes in, will your Saturday in the Sunwine be Baby Duck or Lonesome Charlie? And I'm going to go with Lonesome Charlie, which was a boxed, rosé, wine, high sugar sort of thing. I figure in a pandemic when it's global self-isolation, I should drink something called Lonesome Charlie.
There's a certain kind of wine, and you know it just by looking at the label, where you say, this is probably best drunk on empty football bleachers by myself or with friends.
Yeah. It has to be a football bleacher. Absolutely.
What's the best bad wine? And let me define this.
Yeah.
It's a wine that you would never buy, but when, you know, it gets served, like Baby Duck, it's a classic, right?
Yeah.
I don't know Lonesome Charlie, but like Matus, that's a classic. Black Tower.
Yep. I'm going to go
standards. What's the best bad wine?
I'm going to go with Black Tower, and Dale Cadeau, who listens, was wondering about Matus or Black Tower. I'm going to go Black Tower because it's Riesling, and that's always the answer for anyone in wine. You're usually going to lean towards the Riesling. So I'll go with Black Tower.
Black Tower is the first booze I ever snuck from my parents.
Really?
They had a bottle of it in their fridge, and I didn't even really know what it was. Like, it wasn't even being mischievous. It was more like, I mean, I guess it kind of was, because I sort of knew they never offered it to me. So there was something up with that.
Yeah.
But I remember taking it and thinking, this is awful. What's up with that?
Ooh, yeah. What's up with that? Oh, what's up with that? Horrible. Best.
Sanderson, they look like Jason Sudeikis in What's Up With That.
You got to do the dancing. And this is an audio podcast. There's no point us dancing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always a point.
Eric.
Okay, so Black Tower, best win.
Yeah, I'm going to go Black Tower. So thank you for that, Derek Dreger. Eric Frieds writes in, is the Jaws series better than the Star Trek film series? And no, I mean, Jaws is better than any of those movies, but the Star Trek series is would crush Jaws.
I don't know that there's any movie series that has greater highs and lows than the Jaws one, because the first movie is literally like one of the 10 best movies ever made.
Yep.
And the third and fourth installments are among the 20 to 25 worst movies ever made.
Yeah. Like, the great thing with the Jaws movies is you have two different Academy Award winners. Lou Gossett Jr. in Part 3, Michael Caine, multiple Oscar winner, in Jaws Goes to the Caribbean.
I think I told you this, that I actually proposed in my final year of university to do a senior thesis based on Jaws for the Revenge.
Did you?
And the triumph of technology over nature.
Did your parents at all help with your university tuition?
You know, they did, in the sense that I think I paid most of it myself. It was pretty cheap back then, in the sense that you could work in the summers and pay for most of all of it. They let me live in their house. Mm-hmm. So that means I didn't have to pay rent, so the money I had could go to school. So
okay. Then you pay for it, because I want a coffee table book of parents' reactions who pay for their kids' full tuition when they find out the courses their kids are taking and their theses they're writing on. Because if your parents paid for your tuition and you're trying to write a final paper about Jaws 4, I'd like to see the look in your dad's face.
Best real dissertation title I've ever heard. Real one. Mm-hmm. Determinism and the USS Enterprise. Why Spock will never be captain.
Oh my God. Arts degrees are the best.
So good. Our culture is going to go into deep recession, and all of a sudden people are going to be like, art history, what?
Yeah. Oh God. Just listen. Anyone listening, go get a science degree or engineering. Aaron Schmeling writes in, top five actors that are in your must-see category. Actors in your must-see category.
Past and present. I can watch anything with Philip Seymour Hoffman in it. I just love watching him act.
Yep.
Cate Blanchett, if she's in it, I'll give anything a try if she's in it, because she's never bad and she makes everything good.
Christoph Waltz. I'm gonna throw him there. Christoph Waltz is in it. I'm gonna absolutely give it a shot.
That's a good one. You know, if I'm being honest, there was a time when Harrison Ford was that guy, but not now. Mm-hmm. I'll watch anything with Brad Pitt in it. I'll give anything with Tina Fey in it a try. Maybe less so now. Maybe less so now. Maybe that was more true 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, but there aren't many, though, because we don't really make stars the way we used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it goes almost to which are the actors where at the worst you're going to get is a C+.
Oh, and I know. Actually, I got one.
Yeah.
I'll watch anything with The Rock in it.
Oh.
Is how many times I've seen San Andreas.
Oh, no. How many times have you seen San Andreas?
Well, enough that it's a thing. I haven't seen it yet, but I will.
The Rock isn't like... He isn't good. Like, he's good, but how many movies he's in have been good?
You take his name out of your mouth.
I watched Skyscraper. It's horrible. It's horrible. Like,
Matt, Tom Cruise is the greatest movie star of all time.
Yes.
About a good 20 to 30% of his movies suck. But he's always good.
Yeah.
Was he good in Cocktail?
Cocktail is awesome, Bob. I won't hear you say anything bad about it.
Out of your mouth.
Exactly. I mean, aside from the soundtrack, which was horrible. It was a great movie.
Yeah.
Kim Alexander writes in, is anyone even watching any of the rerun sports on TV? Do you know the ratings? Will fall and winter be a movie bonanza since so many releases have been moved? In terms of rerun sports, I have them on in the background from time to time and I dip in. But, you know, when you know the final result, it's hard to be emotionally attached to it.
You know, I try it and I actually enjoy it. Like I was mentioning in the last pod, I was watching the 87 Cup Final. Mm-hmm. And I've watched a bit of the Jays, 92-93 stuff. But the problem is the production value is so low. Like, this is like, there's high def, standard def, and then there's like substandard def, which most of this stuff was shot in. Like, it looks awful. And it's just hard to watch it for a long time. Like, I realized that we had nothing to compare to back in the day, but hockey from the 80s honestly looks like you took a watercolor and you poured water on it.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's crazy how different old hockey looks. I mean, I guess it's true of all sports, but, you know, 80s hockey just does not resemble today.
As for, is fall and winter going to be a movie bonanza? Yeah, kind of, but not really, because I don't think people are going to be in a hurry to go to movies. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be something that's hard to justify on the risk-reward scale that we all have in our brains, because we have nothing but 24/7 content following us around. So who wants to go to a public place to see a movie?
I would. I mean, if government and the medical community says, you know, we can go back to normal, I love going to the movies. You know, I would go. I mean, would I do more cleaning and disinfecting than I normally would before this happened? Yes, but I would go back to the movies.
Okay, well, this is a good place where we can jump in and play the game Elimination, actually, Maddie.
Yeah, let's do it. We got 10 more minutes because I got technical people coming here. They got to do stuff with my equipment for the radio show.
All right, well, we'll go through quick and then we'll do Action Heroes.
Yeah.
The game here is I give you some options and you pick which one of these things that you would eliminate. It never comes back. And in the spirit of movie popcorn, beer at a baseball game.
Oh, I'm going to eliminate beer at the baseball game. I need popcorn in the movies.
You know, I honestly think, like, apart from the size of the screen and the communal experience, like a very close second is movie popcorn.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Didn't you tell me if Bob McKenzie's kid ordered movie popcorn into his house from Uber Eats?
Yes, Sean McKenzie did it. And that is just such crass consumption and consumerism. And that's wonderful as well.
All right. So here's a sporty one I got for you. Shootouts in hockey, throwing to first base. Which one do you eliminate?
Oh, throwing to first base in a bleeping heartbeat. Just... Oh, and like, you know, the crowd's booing and the pitcher's like, yeah, it just, I mean, if you want to speed the game up, you say, this is as far as you can go. I know we get rid of the cat. We're going to get rid of that cat and mouse thing, but no one steals bases now anyway. Get rid of the throw to first base.
One NHL franchise doesn't make it back of these ones. Which one is it? Anaheim, the Ottawa Senators, the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Columbus, you're gone. We need Ottawa here just for the Toronto thing. And Anaheim, they won a cup. They get to stay.
I actually think I would eliminate Anaheim personally because it irritates me that Los Angeles has two teams they don't care about and Toronto has one.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, like when you go there, like Anaheim is just sort of like this middle, upper middle class, Orange County, like, it just doesn't fit. It feels so wrong. They are right. The LA Chargers of the NHL.
Okay. That's a fair argument. All right. Hey, Anaheim, I've switched it. You're now gone. All 82 of you can enjoy the memories of when you won a cup, maybe at some point, but you don't remember when it was.
All right. Now we're going to the difficult rounds.
Oh.
Crab or shrimp?
Okay. Crab is better. But shrimp is easier. It's often less work. It's less expensive. I'm getting rid of crab. I'm keeping shrimp. Maybe because I had shrimp last night for dinner.
And this is where I had the Cordell Stewart comparison, in that I would argue that Shrimp is like Tom Brady, in that it's consistently great. And the marvel of it is that it gets the job done year after year.
Yep.
No one identifiable trait that you would say is exceptional, apart from the ability to win.
Yep.
Whereas Crab, and originally I had Cordell Stewart, there's what I call unicorn elite, in the sense where you go, wow, what is this? This is blowing my mind. But it doesn't necessarily win. It's just there to dazzle.
Yeah. Yep. And that is Cordell Stewart.
Cordell Stewart to Lamar Jackson.
Yep. Yeah, you could absolutely do it, because they're 0-2 in the playoffs and didn't look great. Losing to the Titans. That's a great comparison. Crab is Lamar Jackson or Cordell Stewart, depending on when you were born.
Thank you. I worked hard to get that one right.
That was a good one. That is a good analogy.
These are hard.
Okay.
The CFL is asking the federal government for money.
Yep.
One of these things you have to eliminate from the Canadian sports world, the CFL or the CHL, junior hockey?
I'm biased. Goodbye, junior hockey. I'm more of a football guy than a hockey guy, and I write for CFL.ca, and you know, I consider Dave Naylor a close and personal friend. So I'm going to have to, you know, I need Naylor to be working, because his background, he's got the best bookshelf with lit shelves. It's so good. So I'm sorry, junior hockey, you're gone.
Quick sidebar. Do you find that you judge the talking heads on TV based on the quality of the books they have behind them?
Yes. Well, yeah, absolutely. And like Naylor is hitting this other level. Like if I'm Bob McKenzie, I'm worried, because Naylor's coming for him.
Remember when we were shopping for a house, Sandra would go and like look at the rooms, and I would just find the bookshelf in the CD tower and start making judgments accordingly.
It's so true. I used to do that when I was shopping for my first condo. I would look at everyone's books. I was always judging what books they have. Now, you know, later I now judge what wine you have. But yeah, books. It used to be books back in the day.
All right, last one here, Maddie, from the game of elimination.
These are good, by the way. These are good.
Thank you. Muskoka or the rest of the world, including Naples? You have to eliminate travel to either one of those things.
Oh,
Muskoka,
God.
Or the rest of the world, including Naples, Florida, where your family has a condo on the Gulf.
Yeah. I'm going to have to get rid of Muskoka, because if we keep Muskoka and then the rest of the world gets eliminated, then everyone's going to be hanging out on the lake, and then it's going to be packed. So I'm going to get rid of Muskoka, because at least in Naples, I can get my crunchy grouper sandwich, and I do have the presence of water.
Mm-hmm. I actually thought you'd go the other way just because of your emotional connection to Muskoka. I personally would take Muskoka.
Mm-hmm.
But good for you, you know. You're not ready to throw in the towel. I love that.
Yep, nope, not ready at all. That's tough, though.
Are you still planning to go to China? Are you still planning to go to China?
Yeah, well, we would have been back for like the last couple of days. Yeah, people might not remember. I was going to be in China for 17 days in mid-April. That trip got canceled.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, I know you got to go soon, and I spent a lot of time working on these AMC questions, so can I blast some top fives?
Yes, yeah, let's do the ad. I want to hear your top five. We'll just keep doing it until my tech guy comes here. So your top five action movie villains.
All right, so here are the people who almost made it.
Yeah.
Fernando Rey in The French Connection played the Frenchman, who's the drug dealer, mostly because of the amazing scene between him and Gene Hackman, where there's like this chase, and they're going on and off the subway together, and it's magnificent. Belloc in the first Indiana Jones.
Great one. I missed that on my top five. I love that one.
I don't know if I'd call these action movies, but the shark in Jaws and the Velociraptor in Jurassic Park. The fact that you can take like, you know, hokey B villains and somehow bring personality to them.
Yep.
And then spy movies are not action movies technically, but Javier Bardem and
Skyfall.
Yeah. And then the dude who played Goldfinger. Gert Frobe, I think, was his name.
Yep.
Two great Bond villains. Okay, so here's my list. Robert Patrick in Terminator 2.
Yes, T-1000. That was number one on my list.
Really? So you had to be You had to be young enough to not have grown up with CGI to know how hard we freaked when we watched him melt through stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, we had had a bit of a taste of it with The Abyss, but then Terminator 2 came out and we went to a whole other level.
So crazy. Here's not a great villain except for a couple scenes, but I think you'll dig it. Luther in The Warriors.
Yep.
He's the one who's chasing the Warriors, and then he's got the beer bottles on his fingers, and he's going, Warriors.
Yep.
Yay.
Creepy.
Lafatelli in The Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
So mean to Chunk.
Yep.
Agent Smith in the Matrix movies.
Yep.
And then my number one is Arnold Schwarzenegger in the first Terminator, The Terminator.
See, that's a good debate. I was debating between those two, which one I was going to pick. And in the end, I think part of it was because of the special effects. And yeah, in the end, I just picked Robert Patrick because that unemotion, he creeped me out a little bit more.
You know, probably the greatest acting performance of Schwarzenegger's career is as the Terminator. And you would never think it because it seems so ridiculous, but his reading of I'll Be Back mm-hmm. is amazing.
Yeah, it had to be emotional and human, but yet he was still delivering it as an android. So to get that, to nail that was very difficult.
Here was something that I realized, because I went through a lot of options. I took this one pretty seriously, and I realized the hardest part of this question, apart from defining what an action movie is the fact that there aren't a ton of great action hero villains. Not compared to like other genres. Like if I were to say movie villains, you'd have a list that was like 100 long.
Yeah.
It was horror movies, right? And here's what I realized, that a good action movie needs a great hero and a good horror movie needs a great villain.
I think that this is the Captain Obvious point, but don't all great movies, like all great action movies, actually, you know what?
I don't think so.
But the best heroes need a great villain to overcome.
See, here's the thing about action movies that are truly action movies, is that they're not based on the psychology of the film. They're like, a horror movie needs a fear to overcome,
mm-hmm.
and an action movie needs an obstacle to overcome.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, you know, that's what makes Die Hard so great, is you head the great villain in Hans Gruber. Yeah. But you're right, in like a drama thriller, the villain is more important. Anthony Hopkins is more important to Silence of the Lambs than a great villain is to, say, Tango and Cash.
Totally. You know, and to your point about Die Hard, like the first one's a masterpiece, but the second one's really good. And I actually can't remember the villain, and I've seen it probably 5 times.
It was the skinny guy, and you see his ass in the movie. I was like, oh, okay. The skinny Euro-y sort of guy who was like the military fella.
Yeah. Threequels.
Yes. Yes. Top 5 threequels.
You're going to hate this list. I've got a lot that almost made it. I mentioned Skyfall, which I consider a threequel of what's his name? Guy who plays Bond in those movies. Daniel Craig. Ocean's 13 almost made it. Army of Darkness almost made it. Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome almost made it. Return of the King almost made it, which was hard to leave off because it won Best Picture.
Yeah, and it was so good.
But I think it's overrated, though. The best of those movies is The Two Towers, and I've never once said to myself, I'd love to rewatch Return of the King.
Going back for 1 second, someone tweeted in about greatest action movie villains, and you'll mm-hmm. like this, from Army of Darkness, Evil Ash.
Nice. That's a good one.
I was like, kudos to you. Kudos to you.
Well, Army of Darkness is amazing because there's no reason why that should have been a threequel. Like Evil Dead should have been a one-off hokey exploitation C movie in the horror genre, but it was so good. And Ash was such an interesting character. Bruce Campbell did a great job. Okay. So here's my top 5 threequels.
Yep.
Day of the Dead, mm-hmm. the conclusion of the zombie trilogy by George A. Romero.
Yep.
I think the Bourne ultimatum deserves to be here because Jason Bourne's such a good hero. Mm-hmm. And they do wrap up a lot of storylines. Dark Knight Rises. Number two, you're not going to like this, but Red, as the French art film by Christophe Kishan.
Yeah, yeah.
Third of the Three Colors. This one dedicated to fraternity. And then the number one threequel of all time is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Sergio Leone's masterpiece, three works, you know, Fistful of Dollars, a few dollars more, and then The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm. I saw that one a lot. Not a lot of people on the sports show writing with Red. And I think Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Leia, and Lando Calrissian, they'd like you to step into the into their offices because you're fired, Bob. There's
did,
no Return of the Jedi.
Did I make yours?
Of course it did. It's number one.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yes.
Jedi's not very good.
Return of the Jedi is excellent. It just gets dragged all the time because of how good Empire Strikes Back was. To try to find a way to conclude so much of that, you know, and people just don't like Ewoks. The opening stuff with Jabba the Hutt is fantastic, aside from Boba Fett's, you know, comic relief death. Sorry, Return of the Jedi. It's gotten so much trash, it's now underrated.
See, here's the thing. The first half of Jedi is quite good. Boba Fett thing excepted. But the Ewoks ruin it. The Ewoks ruin it, Matt.
I think you got to look past the... By the way, the Ewoks, quietly a little bit evil. At the end, when they're celebrating and they're banging on the heads of stormtroopers as a musical instrument, the Ewoks had a little more edge than you think, Bob.
I read a think piece once in one of these obnoxious magazines about how the Ewoks were an early representation of terrorism.
Bob, what is
in
this?
In guerrilla warfare?
The douchebag stuff that you read. Jesus.
Really something, isn't it? Now, what about Godfather 3?
Godfather 3, if you just took away cousin sex and cousin love, it's a good movie. Like, we're both in agreement. More The Godfather versus the papal and the church and the Vatican, and less two cousins hooking up, and you got a damn good movie.
You know what? I'm going to take it back, Matt. I'm going to swap out the Bourne ultimatum, which I really like, but I'm actually going to put in Godfather 3 into my top five because I think it's really underrated. And you're right. There are things about it that don't work, and George Hamilton is not a good replacement for Robert Duvall. But the Joey Zaza villain is great.
Yep.
You do not give, I take.
That is great. All the scene at the opera, at the like just at the end, like the pacing and just, that was really good. It was really riveting. And the underlying thing of that whole movie is Michael trying to come to grips with the fact that he ordered the death of his own brother. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there.
You know, there's a line in it that I just love. And he says to his daughter, I would go to hell to keep you safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you realize, like, that's been his legacy, his heroism, is his willingness to destroy himself for the love of his family, specifically her.
Yeah.
And he does go to hell because of it. Yeah, I think it's a really good movie. And I have a very unpopular take here. But famously, Winona Ryder was supposed to be to play his daughter.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. And Sofia Coppola was then brought in, and she was lambasted for her performance. I think Winona Ryder would have been worse.
I don't know about that. I think Sofia, she wasn't ready for it. This was like her first time really acting. You know, it's like throwing in a quarterback who's no reps with a bad offensive line with wide receivers worse than the Packers. You know, I think that, you know, she was, I can't tell you if at the very least it would have been a lateral move. I don't think it would have been worse. I can't say it would have been better, but it wouldn't have been worse.
Who showed early signs of promise only to disappoint more? Winona Ryder or Adrian Brody?
Well, I'm going to go Adrian Brody, you know, after The Piano, not a lot, as you know, hasn't really done much and did like one of the Predator movies. But at least Winona Ryder, she's been good in Stranger Things.
She's been okay. She plays someone who's kind of flustered and over her head, which might not be acting.
She, you know what? It is close. You're right. She was so good in Heathers. Do we just do we just like, you know, it's like Kate Hudson in Almost Famous, as you mentioned, Heathers with Winona Ryder. Yeah, there's some people we just get stuck in that one performance they did.
She's great in Beetlejuice. She's great in Edward Scissorhands. It looked like she was going to be like the next Audrey Hepburn with a kind of a gothy alt-rock twist. And just
didn't never happened. No, it didn't. Yeah, you're right.
Are there any other listener questions while we wait for your tech guy to show up?
Let's see. What happens first? Bob leads a wine tasting or Matt properly pronounces Giannis' last name? Antetokounmpo. I've got Giannis' last name. I don't have Tua's last name down yet. That's going to take a little bit of time. And Bob already did a wine tasting, you know, with his, and you got some praise from people in the wine community for, you know, your association with old and new world wines with the people it represents.
I would like to, you know, I would like you to recommend wines for me that I can drink, and then I will give my version of notes.
Yep.
I think that would be really fun.
Well, it all depends also what's in the LCBO. Like, it's hard for me to say, go get this specific bottle. Okay, go get a J-Lore, either Cab or Merlot, whatever's available. Go get a J-Lore.
How do you spell that?
J, then next word, L-O-H-R.
Is that like J-Lore? The, okay.
Yeah, go grab that. Go grab a bottle of that. It's plentiful. It's going to be more to what your tastes are right now. It's popular for a reason, and I don't mean this in a bad way. It's not like movie snob. Oh, well, yeah, you would like Return of the Jedi. You know, it's nothing like that.
No, Matt, you would like Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, just like a lot of people, you snob. Damn good movie.
I am not a snob. In fact, you know who the person who's the snob is?
Oh.
It's you.
Why?
Because you turn your nose up at all my art movie recommendations. But I will roll around in the gutter with you happily.
Actually, I do like a lot of the arty movies I do like. I just roll my eyes because I know there's part of you that is just so smug about these picks. And the thing you should be smug about is your crab and shrimp with Brady and Cordell Stewart. That was the best thing you did on this pod.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, one of my lines I won't cross for obnoxiousness is, you know, I love pho, Vietnamese soup.
Yeah.
And some people refer to it as pho, even though it's spelled P-H-O.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the right way to say it. But there's just something that sounds so arrogant about, you know, some dude walking down Queen Street saying, I'd like to get a good bowl of pho.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you graduated a history degree from McMaster, dude. You know, you went to Richview Collegiate, like.
Oh, that sounds like a good educational path you went there, Bob.
Oh, yeah, that's actually, you went to, I can't believe you went to a high school called Richview.
So did Bob Weeks, Joey Votto, Stephen Harper, Gurdeep. There's a lot of us, that went to Richview.
Yeah, a lot of famous people went to mine, too. John Kay, the lead singer of Steppenwolf. Samantha Bee.
Ah.
Tyler Brulé. He was the editor of Wallpaper and then Monocle magazine. Very successful.
I know that. Monocle magazine, that's for rich people.
It sure is. Maybe the richest thing you can do is wear a monocle.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Bob. My guy is just showing up, so I got to buzz him in. But this has been fun. So every Friday, we'll review my AMC movie list from the week. We'll do listener questions. You know, you can tweet us at our respective Twitter accounts and all of that. And it's good seeing you, Bob.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. And let's just guess what I'll be wearing next time.
A t-shirt and pajama pants.
Good guess.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.